This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Yeah, Jerry Jones.
Are they the smartest show in the Bay Area?
You guys are an intellectual feast for the smart sports fan in the Bay Area.
Wow.
You're pretty much the smartest guy on the radio.
I agree.
Good Lord, how big is your ego?
Are they the funniest show in the Bay Area?
Give it a laugh. Come on. You're a funny guy. Come on. Give me a laugh.
You are funny, dude.
Hit that S again.
Are they the coolest show in the Bay Area?
And no white boys. They cool.
That's what people are saying.
You guys are phenomenal.
This is one of the most perfect ways that I could end my day, getting the chance to talk to Mr. Mark and Dan, you know?
We'll let you be the judge.
Oh.
All I know is it's a couple of Bay Area boys talking sports.
I know nothing.
Thanks.
It's Willard and Dibs on 95.7 The Game.
Hey, LFG, best day of the week. And we just got Dibs to use the phrase must win.
No, I did not say must win.
No, you did. You said it's not a must win, but you did use the phrase.
Fair enough. Yeah. It's a bust win.
Yeah, but I think
if they don't win, then just forget your Super Bowl talk at 2-3. Miss me with that.
It's a fun phrase. It sounds like a hat. It's not a must win. It's a bust win. But to me, when you use the phrase, and I don't want to get into semantics, but if you use the phrase must win, like that means you're talking about the Super Bowl. So if you're selling the idea that if they lose this one, the Super Bowl is out, then I would say you are de facto using the phrase must win. But I do wonder.
You can de facto me all you want.
Why, facts
would be, and you can't spell de facto without fact, and the fact would be you're 0-2 in the division,
yeah.
And Arizona would leapfrog you, and Seattle's ahead of you, and you got a short week on the road at Seattle, and then you've got a negative rest disadvantage against Kansas City. They're coming off a bye. Without this game and a win, you're in a little bit of trouble here in the first half.
It's not great. I'm not going to argue that it's like, okay, if they go out and lose football games. Football games are incredibly urgent. All of them are very important. When they're in the division, they're more like a game and a half. I'll agree with you on all of those things. I just wonder why we keep trying to win the Super Bowl in September and October.
Not trying to win it now, just not trying to lose it now.
Yeah, but you won't. Like, I don't know how many times we need to learn this lesson that what's going on in the playoffs is not won or lost in the first quarter or even the first half of a season. Sure, if we're 9 games in and the Niners are 2-7, okay, we can have a conversation. But like this game, teams can look very different. Baltimore will go to the playoffs this year and look back and go, how the hell did we blow a 2-score lead in the fourth quarter at home to the Raiders? How do we do that? And the Niners will forever, no matter where this thing goes. What the hell actually happened there week 3 in L.A.?
Another blown 10-point lead by Shanahan.
How on earth did we lose that game? So there's going to be those. There's going to be those. But from the 2022 Warriors to, I don't know, the 2022 49ers, like how often do we have to learn that things can look very, very different 2 months from now than they do now? I would argue there is at least a solid chance that everything the 49ers are experiencing in camp and early in this season could end up making them that much more powerful in December and January. There's a scenario. I don't know about anyone's health. I can't make a prediction there. But there's a scenario that the December and January team has Christian McCaffrey and Dre Greenlaw on it, and D. Winters and Jordan Mason and all of these other people. Now Juwan Jennings, because of what's happened, there's a scenario that all of that depth is that much more experienced and better of a team because of the crap that you experienced in August and September.
There's also a scenario where you don't have McCaffrey, who's yet to play, and
sure,
you don't have Dre Greenlaw, who's yet to play, and your prized running back, who is number one in the league in carries, is, I don't know, worn out after 375 carries. So
sure,
we can play either side of that coin all we want about December and January and how it looks. I'm just saying, if you lose to Arizona at home, a team that you should beat anywhere you play them, and you are really good at home, and you've owned them the last 2 years, and they come in a spot where they're not as good as you are, even if Fred Warner's questionable and George Kittle questionable and McCaffrey's out and all the rest of it.
I'm with you until you get to this last sentence.
I don't need to even bring
it
home.
What does it mean? Yes, you do. What does it mean?
It means that you're not as good as we thought.
No, it means you blew this
Sunday. Right now in October.
There you go. It means you blew Sunday. So don't do that.
How many more Sundays can you blow before you start to think, huh, you know what? Maybe they're not going to be the team that we thought they were going to be.
Probably four.
Four more?
I mean,
or four total? Because they've already blown one.
They need to win at least 10 games.
Minnesota was not blown. You went to Minnesota and you lost to a good team.
Yeah, we
didn't
know that.
And turns out they're better than we thought.
Yeah.
And you're all welcome for Sam Darnold because I told you he was a good quarterback and none of you believe me.
Oh,
and now it's coming home to roost.
Who said he wasn't?
Welcome.
Who said he wasn't a good quarterback?
All y'all hating on the redhead.
All I ever said last year, and I've been proven correct, and you've never handed flowers to me, is that the 49ers would not look the same if Brock left and Sam came in.
He got one game and he played with a bunch of twos.
Right.
He had no starter with him.
Brock's a star. Brock's a star.
What's Sam Darnold?
A good quarterback.
Really good quarterback.
I mean,
he's a Pro Bowler this year.
Yeah.
He's in the MVP
a Pro Bowler.
Race.
Half the quarterbacks are Pro Bowlers.
Whatever, a third. Something like that.
Anyway, yeah, I just, like, I know it's difficult, but, like, come on. Let's not make sentences from this Sunday about January. It is one little puzzle piece that will be helpful to win, and they should, and all of those things. But it doesn't have anything to do with the season is not won or lost. You're not a bust if you lose this game. You had a disappointing, crappy Sunday, pending how it went. Like, also, why? Why'd you lose? Did eight people go out injured? I don't know. Did somebody catch a Hail Mary? I have no idea what's
short
going on.
If your quarterback getting hurt, you have no excuses. Against Arizona.
Probably not. What if Fred Warner doesn't play and Kyler Murray torches him?
Well, then that's on Sorensen and the defense.
Okay.
You've got enough defensive help. You have enough good defensive players to where you should be able to survive without Fred Warner. And you look at what they did last Sunday without Fred Warner in the second half, and the defense looked pretty good.
Already up double digits against a team that is passing challenged.
Exactly.
Right. That's very different than what they're facing
Arizona
this weekend.
Arizona is not a highly vaunted passing offense.
They're a hell of a lot more dangerous than Jacoby Brissett.
Agreed, but it's not like they're going to step back and light you up like Patrick Mahomes. It still is Kyler Murray, and the biggest threat in this offense is James Conner, a 230-pound bulldozer, and Kyler Murray with his legs, and then Marvin Harrison, and then Trey McBride if he plays coming out of the protocol.
Yeah. I mean, it's like, I find it to be a dangerous team. It's a dangerous team. We can do that. Well, how'd they look last week? Well, how'd they look the week before that? Well, how'd they look the week before that? How'd they look the week before that? Like, they are able, at times, to put up a lot of points. And let's not act like the 49er defense has looked like one thing all the time. They looked really good against the Jets. Then Sam Darnold at his own three suddenly became scary. Then Matt Stafford in the second half, with no weapons and no offensive line, started hucking the ball all over the place. And then one of the worst offenses in the league, and I told you this would happen, one of the worst offenses in the league will come in, and all of a sudden we'll spend a week going, Niner defense is back.
Look better.
Are they? Are they? Even Greg Cosell said it to us yesterday. I take something north of, but not much, something barely north of nothing from last week. If you can't play defense against that team, you can't be an NFL team. Like, they offer nothing. They have one good offensive weapon, and he fumbles once a game. Literally. You couldn't name a wide receiver on that team before they came to town. They don't have a quarterback. They've got a talented running back who can't hold on to the ball. There's no tight end. Half their offensive line left in the middle of the game. We're going to peacock around. Oh, the defense look good. You better look good against them. They're awful.
How many of those guys on offense are paid to play football?
All of them.
Thank you. So let's but just
that's not let's a good not be, measuring stick.
It is a measuring stick.
No, it's not, because that's true every week.
It's not
ever.
Like you're taking on West Texas A&M. You're taking on professional football players.
Yeah, okay.
And a professional team. And I don't think it's fair to just completely, and you can do whatever you want.
You're doing
discount.
It for this weekend.
Well, I don't. This
they
team
better
is better.
Win or else they're
well,
a bust.
They better win.
I mean,
they better win.
This team is absolutely more dangerous and more of a measuring stick to see where this defense actually is than the New England Patriots.
I'll give you that, but at the same time, you are at home against a team that you have dominated over the last 2 years, and I know every year is different, but you've got a defense, even without Fred Warner, that is much better now than it was 2 weeks ago, and you can discount New England all you want, and you look at the offense, and Debo's going to play. George Kittle, I would expect, will play. You're going to have Mason and Ayuk and Juwan Jennings, and you've got a quarterback who is a star. And all he's ever done is put up 30 points a game on average. I think he's averaging 29.7 in the games he started. So if you can't hold Arizona under 30, then I don't know what to tell you. I think they will.
Yeah, it's a really bad week.
This game feels like a 30-20 win. Easy. Yeah,
most of them do on Thursdays and Fridays, don't they? That's kind of the cadence of the 49ers.
Yeah, Minnesota was different.
Yeah, absolutely. That's why I said most.
Yeah.
That's why I said most. I like most games, when you look at the cadence of how you feel they probably should end up, especially home games, with this version of the 49ers, I've made this comp before. It feels very much like Pete Carroll's USC. Director of Sports Lucas Alexander will start listening to the show as I make this point. Like, it was very, everybody had the same score prediction when Matt Leinart and Reggie Bush and Lendale White and Strike Up the Band and Traveler and all that was going on. It was always like you'd go around on the radio and do your score prediction, and everybody had the same one. They would just change the second number a little bit. It's 48-10, 45-13, 46-17, Mark. It's all the same thing. If you score on the majority of your drives, maybe some are field goals instead of touchdowns, what have you, the other teams is going to sneak in for a couple of scores. Maybe they get a turnover and turn it into three scores. But look at last week's final score, and that's kind of the average of what a 49er game should look like if it sort of kind of goes the way it should go, right? Niners should be in the neighborhood of 30, and the other team should be in the neighborhood of 14-17. That's kind of the way a Niner game should go most of the time, I feel.
You would guess, but Arizona's offense is better, so you can understand that they might score a little bit more than 14 or 17, but you should still get your 30 because Arizona's defense is not that great.
I'll agree with that.
And you've got everybody short of Christian McCaffrey, and I do believe George Kittle will play. And if you've got Debo and Ayuk, and, you know, this is the week, Mark, this is the week for Brandon Ayuk to have that breakout game.
Oh,
and I'll be honest with you, I'm sick and tired of, and shout out Guru and Prize Picks, and every week I do my Prize Picks lineup.
Do you bet on it?
Oh, yeah.
What are his numbers like normally?
Normally, it's like 5.5 catches. Okay. Or,
and you've been betting the over each week?
Last week, actually, I bet the over a half a touchdown. I thought, you know what? This is the week. And he had a chance.
When he caught that
your guy threw it into double coverage. He wasn't even open.
Well, no, what about
Brock threw it up for grabs.
Did your heart skip on the opening play?
Yeah, the 36-yarder.
Like he turned right?
That's a long way to go for a touchdown.
But you didn't know on TV if there's a defender there or not.
Right.
And if he's going to get blocked.
He would have had to go another 40 yards to get to the hizzy, but I was like, okay, at the very least, all right, good start.
They got the rapport back.
They're going to target Brandon today. I like my chances. Let me look at my other Prize Picks.
One more catch. What's his over-under on yardage usually?
I'll look.
What is it for this weekend?
I'll punch it up. Sometimes they don't come out till tomorrow, but I'll look because normally it's in that 55-60 range. I wonder if it hasn't gone down.
How would you react if there is the quote-unquote breakout game? Like, what would you say on Monday? B.A. does 6 catches for 120 and a score.
Yeah.
What's the thought?
Oh, he's back.
Okay.
He back. He's back.
All right.
And honestly, my big thing would be the connection between Brock and Brandon. And I know Brock's going to talk today in about an hour after practice. And
Brock talk.
I hope in Brock talk today, I hope that somebody asks him about Brandon and like, are you guys just not quite in sync? Same page, pick your cliche. Because I'm not seeing them in lockstep. Brandon's only catching 52% of his targets right now, and I do think that the blame falls with both of them, including your guy, Purdy, your guy.
Yeah, you're damn right.
That's
my guy.
Find my guy, B.A., Brock.
Yeah.
Intentionally throwing it wide of him to make my guy look bad.
He is struggling, that Brock Purdy, the whole leading the NFL and everything guy. All right, that segment is sponsored by Frontier Ford. The end of summer sales event is on at Frontier Ford on Stevens Creek in Santa Clara. Now's the time to get a great deal on a new Ford car, truck, or SUV, so stop by or visit FrontierFord.com for incredible savings and drive away in your dream Ford at Frontier Ford or FrontierFord.com. Okay, check it out. Great guest list today, by the way. Mark Schlereth in a half hour. GP2 from Hawaii is going to be in the 4 o'clock hour. He's always a blast. That'll be fun. We'd love to hear from you. 888-957-9570. And just ponder this, and then we'll talk about it next. You're free to call in. What do you think's going on with Brandon? What do you think's going on? What do you see if you were to try to do the amateur psychoanalysis? 888-957-9570 is the number. This is Willard and Dibs.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, back to
Will and Dibby
on 95.7 The Game.
Mark Schlereth in a half hour. Stink.
Yeah.
Take a whiff.
I will. And I just want to say this quickly and once because I don't love Mark Grandy, but I respect him, and you know that. Yep. But the rejoin music with Ken on the ones and twos, we got some Halen, we've had some Zeppelin.
Wow. It's like all good music. It's a wonderful blend of joy and anger.
I like that.
And that's what happens when the Mets are tied 1-1 in a playoff series. Ken is wearing a different piece of Mets paraphernalia every day.
He's a New Yorker.
And the music, I think, reflects what happened over the last 24 hours with the Mets. So you're going to get a little bit of a harder sort of an approach today, I would argue.
And I also think that your joy and anger is perfectly appropriate for today because it's joy now and it's going to be anger later when the Mets are... Adios, pelota!
Is that a prediction?
Yes, the Mets are going to lose.
My ass!
You know why? Because it's what the Mets do. Meet the Mets, beat the Mets.
Everybody
knows that you stink the Mets.
Okay. Ken, you should never be happier than right this moment. You just got guaranteed a win today.
Exactly.
So
whatever, dude, I'm hot. And I got a Thursday night lock coming, too.
Fade the Divers is coming up here in less than 2.5 hours.
And
very exciting.
I've deeply researched today's game.
Falcons and Bucks.
And I went through all the permutations. I ran multiple simulations on today's game.
You
and
I know what those are.
It's a permutation sensation.
It's exciting.
Cha-ching!
And I guarantee you, I go from 7-6 on the year to 8-6. I've got a Thursday night lock for you.
You can't guarantee. You're not allowed to do that.
All I do is win, aside from those six games and that one tie, no matter what.
All I do is win, and lose.
A lot.
Yeah, exactly.
Whatever, tonight's different.
What are we at, 2.5? 2.5, is that the number you're playing with? Is that right?
Yeah, I'll look at it.
That's what I see.
Falcons are favored by 2.5 over the Bucks, and your boy.
Maker Bayfield.
I have to stream him in our league. Jalen Hurts is on a bye. I have to stream Baker Mayfield. I had Derek Carr, but I can't play him against the Chiefs on Monday night. That defense is too good.
Yeah.
So I got to stream Baker Mayfield.
I've got Jared Goff on a bye, and my sources tell me that he may or may not be in the Bay Area getting ready for the biggest college football game in the Bay Area in a decade.
There's zero chance he's not here.
Jared Goff?
You can. There's no way that Jared Goff from Marin Catholic and Calzone, he's not a Calzone, but Calzone.
It'd be a lot cooler if he was.
Yeah, like I'm hungry.
I love anyway, a Calzone.
I mean, Calzone. Thank you. And game day's here,
yep.
And he's on a bye. Like, I'd be offended if I were Cal and Jared didn't come home.
Well, we know that Marshawn Lynch is going to be the guest picker at game day. Game day is going to be here in town, and I know we'll get into this more tomorrow, but my sources tell me that Jared Goff is or will be in the Bay Area. I called my Detroit Lions contact, and he said, yeah, I'm going to have to cut this short. I'm in Jamaica.
Oh, damn.
On a bye week. And I said, you do you, kid.
And he is.
Jamaica.
Woo!
Nothing like a little bye week flex.
Jamaica, a lot of money.
Dude, seriously.
Oh, man. Good for him.
And I'm pumped for this whole game day experience where students can line up as early as midnight tomorrow to go out to Berkeley and be a part of the game day experience. And I told you that I went to game day at A&M College Station against Tennessee. And it's one of those things where if you're into, forget sports and college football, if you're into like events with people and fun, game day is like at the peak.
Events with people and fun.
Right.
I'm pro events with people and fun.
Day drinking and sun and young people. Game day is about, I'm going
to
drink
never,
it.
I've never even, this is very high on the sports bucket list, I've never been to a college football game in the SEC. Like, I've never been.
Yeah.
I've never been to LSU. I've never been to Georgia, Bama, any of those places that you don't like, Tennessee, old Rocky Top. Like,
that was on my bucket list, too.
Never done
it. So I grabbed my college roommate, Kenny Flamer. We flew to Houston. It's about a 2.5-hour drive to College Station, and we stayed 3 nights in some 2-star motel and played a couple of rounds of golf and did game day and went to Kyle Field. And we did the midnight yell the night before, and it was awesome.
Did you have any drinks?
I'm going to drink it.
As you're describing it, I'm like, he was drunk the whole time.
The whole time. Yeah. And so before the game, they have like an indoor tailgate in their indoor facility, and Coach Sumlin at the time.
Yes, Kevin Sumlin.
Kevin Sumlin and his family was there, and I'm doing jello shots with Kevin Sumlin's wife, and I look over, and my buddy Kenny is like line dancing with Sumlin's daughters, and I'm like, this officially, they're at college age. Yeah, I'm going to drink it.
Yeah, but his wife wasn't. You're doing jello shots with Kevin Sumlin's wife?
Well, I mean, she didn't have to call plays. The hubby was busy. We were getting down, Coach. That was a fun tailgate on the AstroTurf.
And I jiggle it often.
Yeah, there was some jiggling that took place that day.
Oh, gosh.
Your boy was about 3/4 in the bag by kickoff. And then it went to double overtime. I'm surprised I made that.
I can't even picture it. You doing jello shots with Kevin Sumlin's wife?
At like 10:30 in the morning.
What are you doing?
Pre-gaming. You got a pre-game, Coach. It's the SEC.
Some
second-tier conference. Yeah, you got to do a big
fly-by-night operation.
Thank you. Anyway.
Yeah, anyway.
Early plug for the Cal event.
No, let's go. I mean, I'm not going, but let's go. Like, if it was 413 years ago, I'd go.
I get that.
Yeah, I'm not going.
And I was telling Steiny, it's the biggest college football game since, and I looked it up, the last college football game locally.
Oh, in the Bay Area?
Right.
Okay.
And I went back I actually went back to, I think it was 2015, when Christian McCaffrey and an 8-1 Stanford hosted Oregon, DeForest Buckner. And Stanford scored, and they had to go for 2 to win it, and they didn't, and they lost.
Was that Andrew Luck, or was that post-Luck?
Might have been post-Luck.
Okay.
It was 2015, I believe, when Stanford was ranked number 7, and I think Oregon was ranked number 13.
Okay.
That, for me, locally anyway, and apologies to San Jose State. I know you've had some big games down there, and I don't want to disrespect your program.
There's a lot. If you want to get into the, like when Aaron Rodgers was at Cal and USC was at the top of their game, and like there have been a lot.
But that's further back than that.
Yes.
So I was thinking about the most recent game, up until now, and that year Stanford went 12-2, and yeah, they lost 38-36 to Oregon.
I remember that game.
Not in Palo Alto, Mark.
in Stanford.
In Stanford, yeah, as we discussed yesterday. Anyway,
learned my lesson.
I'm secretly kind of pumped for this game on Saturday.
Why wouldn't you be? No, it's not something that comes around very often. So I do hope that everybody just go. You're not going to have another chance to do this. You're not going to have another chance to do this.
Right.
You know what I mean?
And BART actually is running early trains. They're running trains earlier than normal on Saturday so that you can get out to the game and you can partake in the festivities. So if you want to jump on a 3:30 a.m. BART train, you can.
When you see an event that's like up your wheelhouse and you know, like you can sit here right now and be like, this is the only time I'm ever going to have a chance to do it. You got to go.
Yep.
You got to go. If you're a Cal person, if you're a college football fan, if you're a sports fan, and this fits in any way, shape, or form into your weekend, yeah, man, you got to go. You got to go. I was texting somebody about this morning. This will sound, I'm going to nerd out here. You'll think I'm a complete dork, but whatever, you already do. So, you know the band Oasis?
Yeah.
Right. So, like,
you love them.
I love them. And the brothers hated each other and they broke up. This is the Eagles version of Hell Freezes Over. Like, they were never going to speak to each other again. And then, poof, a month and a half ago, they got back together. They're doing a European tour. And then they announced 5 dates next year in the United States or in North America. I don't even think they're all in the United States.
Okay.
And one of them's in LA. And you had to go online and try to get a code and like win a lottery to even have a chance at tickets. I didn't win. But I'm going to find my way into that damn building.
Oh, we'll get you
in
there.
I'm going to find my way into that damn building next year because this is it. If you like that, Kirk Cousins, tonight, 5:20.
Yep. You like that?
If you, and I do, that's just me. Call me a dork. But if you like that, you got to go.
Yeah.
This is it. I'm not going to, this is, I don't think this is ever going to happen again. They're not going to just like each other now into their 70s. So anyway, yeah, you got to do it this weekend.
Well, I'll get you into that concert.
Thank you. How?
You know
oh,
how.
Oh, right. I forgot.
My son's friend.
The ticket scam.
That's amazing. Ken, my son Quest has a good friend, yeah. Nina, who happens to be really good at acquiring tickets aftermarket.
She's got an illegal ticket ring.
Wait, what black market is this?
Yeah, like
incorrect. She was like able to get last-minute Taylor Swift for face value.
Right, the night before Taylor Swift, she's just like, yeah, get your face value tickets. I'm like, that doesn't exist. I've got a 15-year-old daughter. You can't do that. That's not a thing. And he's like, yeah, it is. I'm like, yeah, if you want to get arrested, it is.
My son and Nina were there, and granted it was a partially obstructed view, but they were in the building.
As long as you can hear it.
Exactly.
All right. That's
beautiful. Pivot.
I've always loved your son and Nina.
Yeah.
And I think the highest things of them, and it is in September at the Rose Bowl next year. Cheers.
We'll get you in.
All right, thank you.
As we pivot back to the Niners, I want to transition off of that Stanford game as a way to maybe cast some light on why we should be more patient with Christian McCaffrey in this recovery, because I'm looking at this game against Oregon in 2015. Christian McCaffrey, 33 carries for 153, 5 catches for 42. The man had 38 touches for 195 yards on a Saturday in November.
9 years ago.
Right.
He's been doing this
right
for over a decade.
So if he wants to have, I know he doesn't want to have, but if he has bilateral Achilles tendonitis, can we give him till week 12 before we really try to rush this man back?
I think that the whole McCaffrey thing, it has totally chilled out. Go to whatever emotions were going through your body when we sat together on opening night,
yep,
and the news broke, whatever it was, an hour and a half to 2 hours before kickoff of the game against the Jets, and it felt like the whole NFL world went, oh God. And by the way, at that moment, in no way, shape, or form did we have any sense of the gravity of this.
Right.
It was just like, oh, he's not ready. Okay, well, we'll see him in Minnesota, I guess. That's how it felt that day, and it was still a huge deal. And now Jordan Mason has been Jordan Mason, and I don't think anybody in a rush? I think, actually, I hear more people say the opposite, which is that they're like, I'm sort of planning on Christian McCaffrey not playing this year at all.
This year?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I feel like that's how people are at least approaching it. I don't think that that's the case. But I think that's what people are readying themselves for.
Yes, but I also think that, you know, as the season goes on, and if you you know, maybe you lose to Seattle on Thursday and the Chiefs get you and the Cowboys get you and all of a sudden now you're 3-5. I do think that that urgency will ramp up coming out of the bye. A lot of it depends on where you are going into the bye because the sense is that he won't be back until after the bye, right? Which is early November. And at that point, if you're 8 games in and you have your bye in week 9 and you are 6-2, well then, yeah, a Christian, just wait until December. Get you 2 games before the playoffs and then ramp you up for the stretch run. But if you're 3-5, I do think that the urgency is going to be a little bit different.
I don't know. I mean, it's an interesting sort of way to look at it. I sort of more just think about it, not in terms of the Niners record, but I think about it in terms of Christian's legs. You know what I mean? Christian, we know who he is. When he's ready, he's going to play. It doesn't matter if the Niners are 6-2 or 2-6. When he's ready, he's going to go. He's going to go all out. And is he ready in November? Is he ready in December? Is he not ready at all? I can't answer any of that. It sounds to me like most of the expert voices who talk about this are trying to sort of like lessen the concern a little bit, and their loose target is early November. I think that that's probable. What is that? It's like the week 10-ish?
Week 10.
Week 10. And who is that? Who are they playing?
I'll punch it up. You've got the week. You've got week 9 is your bye.
Yeah, and so then, there it is, coming out of the bye.
I think it's Buffalo. No, you've got Tampa Bay.
There you go.
Then Seattle, then Green Bay, then Buffalo.
Yeah.
So
I mean, that's your odds-on spot now, but like, yeah.
Tampa's November 10th, so you'd be looking at, that'd be 34 days from now, five weeks.
Another 5.5 weeks.
Right.
Yeah, yeah.
That's so, probably it.
Anyway, Schlereth is going to join us here in 13 minutes. 888-957-9570. How would you answer that question? We were talking a little bit about Ayuk. What do you see? What do you think's going on? Because the more I was listening to Stein and Goo talk about it, the conversations you and I have had, I do get, I'm starting to get Durant vibes. And I don't dislike, I love Kevin Durant. I don't even understand a lot of the angst that he's received from this particular fan base. But I wonder about Brandon Ayuk and whether or not he's a mind changer, which I think Kevin is. And it's okay. It's not a bad characteristic. It's just a characteristic. And it can make things difficult when two things happen. A, there is stress at work. And B, you're in a job that gets talked about a lot. I don't think Kevin Durant would have burner accounts if he had a job that wasn't so public. But I think that's one thing we probably have not talked about enough with Brandon Ayuk, is that while he was going through whatever he was going through this summer, and a contract negotiation and TikTok and all of the things that took place in a hold-in, I would argue for the first time in his life, he's really getting debated out in the public space. He's getting talked about. People have got big opinions. I'm one of those people. There are people saying things, I would argue, probably for the first time in his life that aren't great. Opinions of people who are not agreeing with the way that he's going about his business. That affects some people in a significant way. Others blow it off and don't even know it's happening. I don't know if Tim Duncan even knows what social media is. I don't know if Kawhi Leonard, right? Oh, this guy's never healthy. Does he even know that people are saying that? Probably not. Brandon, who literally waged his war on social media, is probably very aware of what's going on. And if you take that out onto the field with you, I'd argue that's not a good thing.
Right, but I don't see that from Brandon Ayuk. I don't see him taking that out on the field. What I've seen from Brandon Ayuk is a guy who is drawing a lot more attention from defenses, and as a result, he's not getting the same number of targets. Juwan Jennings is benefiting from Brandon Ayuk being out there. Debo was back this weekend, and Ayuk got, you know, 5 targets, and of the 5 targets he got, 2 were throws that he could catch. A couple of them were overthrows. One was just a chuck it up for grabs into double coverage in the end zone that resulted in an interception, which, no big deal. You already had the lead. And Brock Purdy took a chance like he did with George Kittle, which was into triple coverage. And George Kittle was able to go up and get it. So I don't sense yet from Ayuk that level of frustration. I don't, and he's an interesting one because he wanted to get paid,
right.
And he got paid. And I think ultimately he wanted to be here and get paid. And so he got what he wanted. And now I think he wants to go out there and get targets and get catches and get wins. And so far he's not getting that. They're 2-2, not terrible. His target share is not what it was. His catch percentage is way down. He's at 52% catch percentage, which is what percentage of your targets do you catch? Last year he was in the mid-70s, and he has been most of his career. I think it's still so early that he's not yet showing that level of frustration that other receivers might already be.
It's a small sample, but yeah, if you kind of follow the timeline, you wonder, and I do have some compassion with this, even though I've been highly critical of the way all of this was handled. I have compassion for the idea that, okay, you go through a bumpy ride, then you sign your deal. What's the next thing you want to do if you're Brandon Ayuk?
Ball out.
You want to prove it.
Yep.
You want to show everybody that you are worth that deal. And then you go out there, and what happens your very first night? First of all, you don't even get your full complement of snaps yet because you're not up to speed. But then when you do get your opportunity, what happens? Ball bounces off your arms in the end zone. Okay. So from that moment forward, you're sort of at a deficit. You're trying, in your mind at least, because I don't think the Niner fan base was ready to pounce at that point at all. It's like, all right, dude, he dropped the ball. You missed training camp. Some of us are frustrated by it. Some of us are not. Whatever. Is Kyle frustrated by it? Maybe. I don't know. But you dropped a ball. Everything's fine. The Niners win by double digits. You're 1-0. Everybody's celebrating. It's all good. But then what happens? You lose two football games in a row. And now, again, like how many catches has he had in the whole season? Has he had over three catches in a game yet?
He's got 13, yeah.
13?
2 with 4.
Okay. So, but you start, he has not hit 50 yards yet in a game.
No.
All right.
No.
So it mounts. Week 2.
No touchdowns.
A loss. No touchdown. Week 3, a loss. He's open for a touchdown. Brock doesn't see him. He drops a couple more, my opinion. Anyway, he hasn't got, and so it starts to snowball where I would argue it's very possible that Brandon Ayuk is trying to prove something to a bunch of people that aren't asking him to do so. I don't need Brandon to prove that he's a good player. We already know that. That's done. That's a baked cake. Brandon's a really good player. What I would love to see is for Brandon A to make good on the opportunities that he's getting, and B, I really do hope that he and everyone around him, the whole team for that matter, hell, the whole city, from Blake Snell to Trent Williams to Brandon Ayuk and Nick Bosa, camp matters. Stop holding out. It screws things up. So learn that lesson and take that with you into the future. That's all you can do.
Right, but that's done. I mean, the whole idea of camp matters, and yes, Brandon, I think, said as much when he said, yeah, I kind of made things tougher than I probably should have and all that. And the whole idea of camp mattering, that ship has sailed, because yes, camp matters, and Blake Snell realized that camp matters, and he had 2 bad months and he had 2 injuries early on, and Brandon Ayuk has 13 catches in 4 games. And if you look at yards per reception, it's as low as it was his rookie year, and his catch percentage is lowest of his career. And yards per target, the lowest. Touchdowns, he has 0. All the metrics are showing you that he's wide receiver 3 on this team,
yep,
at best. And you are getting $30 million starting next year. So, yeah, I'm sure he's feeling it like, man, I want to go out there and prove it. But at the same time, there's more to it than just him producing numbers, because he's going to draw a lot more attention defensively. And he played 1 game without Debo or George, and in that game, they were all over him, and Juwan Jennings went bananas. And so I think that there's more to it than just the numbers. But also, I wonder if there isn't a little piece of Kyle thinking, I'm going to scheme up plays for Juwan, who has been there, and Juwan's been the guy, and Debo is the wide back, and you had Debo start the game as the running back, and Kittle. And I wonder how much of that, like, play design-wise, is going against him.
Mark Schlereth knows the Shanahan family real, 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 real well, and also did not like the idea of paying Brandon Ayuk. He's a great person to ask some of these questions, because I really do want to dig into how Kyle probably feels about all of this. Is he actually mad, or is it just kind of one of those Steve Kerr, Draymond type relationships where, you know, you take the annoyances, but you actually love the guy? I don't know. Let's get into that with Schlereth next. We're presented by Fremont Bank, celebrating 60 years of full service banking with no compromises. Willard and Dibs.
This season of the WNBA has gone to new heights.
And that means the playoffs are going to be hotter than ever.
Welcome to Queens of the Court, an Odyssey original podcast.
I'm your girl, Cheryl Swoops.
And I'm Jordan Robinson.
And all WNBA season long, we've brought you analysis and interviews with some of your favorite court queens.
So for the finals, you know we're bringing takes you can only find in this courtroom.
Listen to and follow Queens of the Court, a WNBA podcast on the free Odyssey app or wherever you get your podcasts.